Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and Comics Dungeon. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Nicole Lamb.
Hello.
Cole Hornaday.
Hey, Ben.
And Chris Casso.
Hello.
How is everybody doing?
Great.
Shocked.
Caught off guard. Yeah. Chris is about to say something, and then you began, and it was like, ah!
I know.
You could see his lips working, his brow furrowing.
You get it.
It's a little spittle foaming on his lips.
We were talking about coffee. I just mentioned that I like my coffee hot.
Too descriptive for you?
Yeah, you get very descriptive.
Yeah.
And it's it's kind of like Ren and Stimpy close-ups.
You used to like that about
you know?
Me.
Oh, Ren and Stimpy.
You used to think it was charming.
I changed. I need you to change with me, Cole.
I don't want to be spiraling down with you, Nicole.
Our radio theater is on a different podcast. Sorry, we're mixing them.
Sorry.
But yeah.
Ooh. Yeah, comic book interpretation.
Spasticradio.com.
All right. So, friends.
I like that channel.
All right.
Spaz Radio.
So, welcome to episode 119. We've done 119 of these coming at you on May 22nd, 2017.
That's a lot.
And, it's a Monday. Happy Monday, everybody. And today, let's talk about a topic that Chris Casso, you sent me a lovely list of things to discuss, and one
stuff
of these was the Justice Society and Legion of Superheroes are slowly returning to DC, and who are they and why should we care? So who are they and why should we care?
So we'll go in order of, I guess, oldest. So the Justice Society were the... Well, they were the original heroes. They were the World War II era superheroes.
The Mystery Men.
Mm-hmm. And they include like the original Green Lantern, Alan Scott, and the original Flash, Jay Garrick, and Hourman, and Hawkman, and a Hawk Girl, and the Midnighter, and then so many other guys with capes and with the singular gimmick.
Dr. Midnight.
Very different guy.
No, not yet.
And in one of my favorites, Ma Hunkel was even there. Wonder Woman was there too. They've been a very important to the structure of DC until the New 52 happened.
Mm-hmm.
And they were basically kind of excised. And we were given a bone. They gave us Earth 2, which technically were the characters, but they were like the young versions of them, and they were just different. So it's like, oh.
Let's double back to Crisis.
Well, that happened too.
Well, for a very long time, DC had, you know, multiple universes and multiple Earths. And if you were savvy enough, you knew the numbers of all the Earths and they mattered and they were fun. But, you know, lots of people are grumpy about Crisis. What I liked about Crisis is that it put all those things together and created a legacy and created a history in the universe and created longer through lines for these characters so that there was a legacy of the Flash mantle. And there was a legacy or well, tragic legacy of like the Hawks, you know, the constant violent, you know, deaths and resurrections. And they created even a legacy for characters like Captain Marvel and stuff like that, which I thoroughly enjoyed, but and clowns my age enjoyed a lot. But they did this weird thing with the Justice Society.
Where they went to Limbo.
Right.
Or Ragnarok or one of those.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
So they were,
and they were trapped for a while.
Right.
They basically were fighting and dying again and again and again and fighting like ancient monsters. And they were trapped there for a while. And I kind of forget how they got out. But see, what I always consider the big turning point, the return of a lot of that stuff is Starman. James Robinson's Starman, because he started to really reintroduce the concept of the legacy heroes and why we should appreciate them. And then around that same time, Grant Morrison brought back the JSA in the Justice League of America, and then they launched a whole new title written by like Dave Goyer, and like Jeff Johns would roll into it. And the Jeff Johns run of Justice Society is kind of, I want to call it like a, for me, a golden age period of DC where they taught you why you should care about the concept of legacy. And they emphasized that the Justice League were kind of like the Strike Force and the Teen Titans were like the friends, but the Justice Society was the family. And they would teach the new generation what it meant to be a hero. And then they disappeared because of New 52.
Right.
We had this huge void. And so in connection to that, we should summarize the Legion of Superheroes really quick. They're the opposite side of the spectrum in that they are in the future. They're the 30th and the 31st century mm-hmm. heroes. And the three main ones are Saturn Girl, Cosmic Boy, and Lightning Lad. And they're BFFs forever, and they met Superboy by time travel, and then they expanded, and there's like a United Federation of Planets thing going on in the future, and a different member from each planet joins the Legion, and at some point they're a full-on Legion. There's over like 30 or 40 heroes, right. And they had split it into numerous books. They're even more of a mess because you have Crisis hitting, but then you get like the reboot period from 1994 to 2004, and then they had something called the three-boot continuity, and then there's the post-Infinite Crisis version, and they actually had to do an event called the Legion of Three Worlds because they established that there are three different groups of Legionnaires from alternate realities and different timelines, and it's a big mess.
And it's always been a mess.
It's always been a mess, but it's a fun mess.
But it's a mess that goes all the way back to the Silver Age, because Legion and Superboy and Superman, you know, a lot of publishers ceased devoting a lot of energy in the 50s to their superhero comics, but DC didn't. And after the Comics Code of Authority was instituted, you know, we didn't have horror comics, we didn't have crime comics anymore, and we started to see this rebirth of superheroes, but there were always those kooky soap opera-like stories. And I never liked Legion of Superheroes because you were walking in to a class reunion that just never stopped. And I remember the first time I went to a big comic book convention in Chicago, there was a Legion fan club there, and there were like 40 people in Legion costumes. And this is like in the 90s, where before cosplay became a dominant part of comic book culture, at least as far as I was concerned. But man, that was a lot of Legion of Superheroes yeah. cosplayers. It was really amazing.
Legion fans and JSA fans are pretty hardcore. I think Legion fans are a little more hardcore. There's big communities about them. And so it's the last time there was a significant Legion run was about 2013. It's like been that long. Mm-hmm. They popped up once or twice, sort of, kind of. It's confusing to try and figure out how they counted amongst the new 52 timelines and stuff. But with the with Rebirth starting, they teased the return. And then with the current Button story arc, Saturn Girl's right at the very first page of that. And she's trapped in the present. But they have teased the return of Jay Garrick at mm-hmm. the end of this event, which we'll know this next week if that's for true. And then the big tease that they also have is one of the original members is Johnny Thunder, who was a kid back in the 40s who had a pen, and if he said the word "see you," a genie would come out of the pen, and it was like the most powerful creature in the universe. So he's an old man now, and he seems like he's crazy, but he's yelling like, "Oh, I've ruined everything, and the genie, please come fix it, and mm-hmm. we need the Justice Society back." So it's like, oh, we're getting there. And then the Saturn Girl keeps on giving portents of horrible things, but everybody, they shoved her into Arkham Asylum, and they're like, oh, she's kind of crazy.
She thinks she's from the future.
Yeah, that kind of trope. And so they're getting there, and it's noticeable because there's a lot of JSA and Legion trades coming out right now. They want to get people that are missing them to buy those versions all over again.
Reprints of like the Silver Age
John stuff books.
They haven't touched the John stuff yet, which hopefully they will. But no, they're kind of doing some oddball ones, like the Last Days of the JSA just came out, and then they also reprinted, what was that four-part one that's in Elseworld where they're fighting
Golden Age?
Yeah, they did that. But then for Legion, they just reprinted Legionnaires, which is something they've never reprinted before. And
is that Chris Sprouse?
I think he's in there. Yeah. And I think they're doing another printing of the Great Darkness Saga as well, which is generally like one of the biggest DC events, or one of the fondest remembered events. So yeah, that and there's a bunch of they're still in print. I'll always recommend. Geoff Johns did do a story arc in Action Comics called Superman and the Legion of Superheroes, where he kind of got back to basics and re-explained why we should care, and he made the substitute Legion of Heroes awesome, mm-hmm. which you know, considering that includes Infectious Lass, that's kind of great. So, yeah.
But just to clarify. The Superboy that's in Legion of Superheroes in the future is Superboy of the past, who goes and hangs out in the future and does all this daring do, and then goes back to the past. And that was all through the Silver Age that first started, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, I want to make sure I remember that.
He just time travels at will.
The Legion are time travelers, and they're kind of fanboys, so they go back and they're like, hey, you're Superboy.
Right.
We're young kids with superpowers, and we kind of want to hang out with you.
But there's a certain point, at least in... when I was reading it, where he had to quit going back into the future because events were coming up, like the death of certain kids. It was Supergirl, wasn't it?
Probably.
Yeah,
so they couldn't really keep him coming up. And they found workarounds in... It's like before the New 52 happened, the Superboy that went to the future of the Legion was the clone Superboy from like the Reign of the Superman.
And
they would do stuff like that.
Well,
what I do recommend from... I think it's kind of lost treasure is, I can't remember who was writing it, but Mike Parabek was drawing Justice Society. Was that in the early 90s?
Yeah. Early 90s.
Was it, I can't remember who was writing it. Wasn't Mark Waid, was it?
No, I don't think it was Mark Waid.
Anyway, Parabek died shortly after he concluded his run on that comic book series, but he had a really unique... cartoony style that really fit the Justice Society comic book really, really well. And I was not even a fan of those characters. I didn't really care about the story up to that point, but I loved his artwork so much that I kept up with it. And as a result, really started to develop a fondness for those characters. So I am working my way through the Flash TV series.
Okay.
And I just finished season one. And I don't really know what happens in season two, but they tease Jay Garrick.
And
I've seen images of the fellow who played the Flash in the 80s.
He's his father.
Right, he's the father in the show. And what's the actor's name?
I forget his name.
It'll come to me. Anyway, do they incorporate Garrick into the... They do.
Right. Yeah, they incorporate Garrick, and he gets to be basically the Golden Age.
John Wesley Shipp.
Yes.
There you go. You are faster than the IMDb, sir.
Thank you. Do you
think that with the room that Rebirth is giving to legacy characters, that there is a place for the Justice Society and Legion to be coming back? Do you think it will fit, unlike trying to push a bad puzzle piece in a New 52 sort of thing?
I think they will, because after the current events of the Superman books, where... they basically, through the power of love, establish Superman as fixing reality and like merging pre-52 and New 52 together. There's already been those little gap fills happening. Like they just made the Cyborg Superman work again, which was difficult, but they made it work. So if you could do that, you could shove the Silver Age characters in. Mm-hmm. It's pretty much just as simple as they said that some big evil creature from outside of the space-time continuum stole time. It's like, oh, it's back. Time's back.
Yeah.
And Flash... if you got flashes running around, then you got a time travel story happening.
Sure. All you need are flashes and a treadmill.
Yep. And the treadmill's here in the Button story.
Yep. Great.
Yep. So there you go. I think it's about time. And I think a lot of fans will be happy. I've had a lot of box customers who are continually angry that there's no Legion or JSA. I mean, you're talking about between the two of them, well over 50 to 60 characters just missing from DC.
Was I tracking this correctly? After one of the big events, the Legion or JSA just disappeared?
They're just...
Was it explained
gone.
Or...
They didn't have a place for them in the New 52.
Okay.
Yeah.
And other than the future!
Yeah. So what they did for New 52 was they made Earth 2. So they're like, oh, here's another Earth and another reality. And there's your guy that looks like the Golden Age Flash. His name's Jay Garrick. Mm-hmm. But he's 20. And he has a completely different costume. And then they're like, and there's Alan Scott, the original Green Lantern, who's also 25 and gay. And, you know, little changes here and there. You know,
gay with just no sexuality.
Right. Well, they fridged his husband right away. You know, they killed his husband.
Oh,
so yeah. Women in refrigerators is when you kill the love interest.
You never heard that? Gail Simone coined that phrase.
I've not heard that.
We need to talk about fridging characters.
Nuking the fridge, I've heard.
Yeah, yeah. That's Indiana Jones.
I know. Yes,
But yeah, the names are there. It's an alternate reality version, and which is totally fine, but it's still not the normal path of the Justice Society and the expansion of characters. Because if you really want to read a series about a family of heroes, the Geoff Johns run of Justice Society is fantastic for mm-hmm. that. Because like Wildcat found out he had a son mm-hmm. who becomes a Wildcat mm-hmm. as well. And then the original Red Tornado, Ma Hunkel, has a granddaughter and she becomes a superheroine. And they're all part of this family unit that's just like bringing
Johnny
up the kids.
Johnny Thunder passes on the pan.
And Jakeem Thunder becomes. And that's the thing. I really hope Jakeem comes back. You know, it's like these are characters that grew and developed over time. Starman passed on the star...
Staff
to Stargirl, who previously had no connection to the legacy, but they made it work.
Right.
And
it became a multicultural, on top of being multi-generational, it was a multicultural family as well, which was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. So there's just, DC's been missing that element so much of legacy, and that's like the perfect way to bring it back.
So DC's doing something good by returning these characters?
Well, don't jump to that conclusion just yet.
We'll see.
Let's wait until
let's
all
hold
pans
on.
Out.
But it opens the door.
All right. Yeah. Cool. Well, I can see Last Days of the Justice Society of America on the shelf over there. And Legion of Superheroes. Has Legion come out yet?
No. Do you mean like a new series? Or?
Yeah.
No. But that's part of the teasing. Because with Saturn Girl showing up in... this crossover event.
Gotcha.
That's them establishing, like, yes, we know these people exist. We will talk
about
them. We're
acknowledging them.
We will talk about it all again. It will matter. So hopefully.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, also, piggybacking onto that, we talked about a couple events there. We happen to complain a lot about events and event stories and how often they happen. But are there any that we like? Are there
Absolutely.
Any that we like?
Yes.
All right. Absolutely.
What are some of the great ones?
Annihilation.
Yes. I was going to say that too.
Yeah.
Annihilation is still one of my favorite events ever.
And what was that?
That was basically, it had nothing to do with Earth, mm-hmm. which is a win right there.
Yep.
And the villain Annihilus, the old Fantastic Four villain, basically has had enough of people coming into his dimension and causing trouble. And so he gets every single creature from his dimension together and basically starts invading the other universe, the mm-hmm. our universe. And it's called the Annihilation Wave. And it's basically just, it's an entire galaxy's worth of bugs, of horrible bug creatures. And they just swarm through the universe, killing everything.
Mm-hmm.
Starting with the Nova Corps. And so if you've seen the Guardians of the Galaxy movie, the Nova Corps is kind of like that, except they all have superpowers and there's more of them, and they're kind of like the Green Lanterns. They die, like all of them die within like 3 pages.
Yeah.
And that's how big the Annihilation Wave was.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was like this last ditch effort of everybody in space against them, and it pushed the main Nova, the main human Nova, Richard Rider, as like a big power in the universe. Silver Surfer was there, Drax was there, Star-Lord was there, and Galactus was a big part of it, but he got turned into a gun.
Oh, okay. I thought he was a battery or something.
Yeah, battery.
Right,
gun.
Yeah, a battery that powered a gun.
So that's how powerful the Annihilation Wave was. Galactus got in front of it, and they took him out, and they used him as like a battery that blew up planets.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And then Thanos showed up, and Thanos is just like, I'm going to side with this Annihilus guy just because it seems the easy thing to do. Had really good artwork. It was a lot of fun, and it was pretty self-contained. So it's like all the right things to make an event work,
mm-hmm.
and good characters.
And you can read that and the Conquest stuff and go into the Guardians of the Galaxy stuff from Abnett and Lanning as well.
Yep.
And so you can have a nice, good chunk of quality reading.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any others?
Yeah, on the DC side, I'll always recommend Multiversity. That was Grant Morrison's big project 2 years ago now. And it was just a crazy experiment in playing with alternate realities. And again, self-contained. You didn't have to worry about what does this mean to anything else. It had huge stakes. It had really nice artwork. It had strange characters. And it was just fun. It was also like a big puzzle piece that you had to just try and figure out as you were reading it. And I like stuff like that.
You managed to figure out the puzzle. I couldn't make heads or tails of it.
Yeah, you're one of the few, I think.
You're pretty hardcore.
That was like your early Providence or something.
Yeah, that was like early Providence.
I actually did enjoy the Secret Wars stuff that happened. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I think that you can enjoy it even more if you read the Hickman stuff that goes like leading up to it, because he built so much up. And I mean, we've had this discussion before. You could go way, way back into Hickman's run and read a lot of different stuff like Fantastic Four and I think even Secret Warriors, but I'm not sure if any of that plays into it.
A little
bit. There's just like little tiny bits and stuff that you can get out of it.
The Shield miniseries that never ended.
Yeah.
Is a part of it. Yeah, Fantastic Four was a part of that too.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it just unfortunately went on for a little too long. It had a lot of other stories. It stopped a lot of titles, you know, so it had a lot of problems, but overall, I really liked Ribic on the art. I liked Jonathan Hickman as a writer. Mm-hmm. I thought that it for me, I was happy with the ending and all of that. So,
cool. Cole, do you have any favorite events?
You know, I get fatigued really fast with crossover events. If it's a subject that intrigues me, I will read the core series. Like I read Secret Wars, but I just, unless it crosses over with the series I'm already invested in, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
I'll wait for a trade and get it at the library. But, you know, frequently those things are long and coming. And by the time I get my hands on those things, I don't care anymore. So, you know, I'm kind of gauging the success on the crossover series on what you're going to give me, because otherwise it's just going to wreak too much of a gimmick and I'm going to get frustrated and ticked off and have one more reason to hate you. I did enjoy Secret Wars, and I have been actually picking up the other miniseries that were wrapped around. Like I read the Old Man Logan one, I've read the Shang-Chi one, or Master of Kung Fu, and I enjoyed those, but I still have not made the time or invested the money to read them all. The one that I think that frustrated me the most was, I can't remember the name of it, where they kill the Watcher.
Original Sin,
which, you know, had all this profound impact. It didn't even have a core series, did it?
Oh, it did.
Yeah. Okay.
It had I didn't read one, that. And then there was Original Sins, and then there were a few other miniseries around.
Trying to figure out what led up to the original Nick Fury whispering what he did in Thor's ear, and we still don't really have an answer to that.
No, they just answered.
We do an unworthy Thor. It took 3 or 4 years to get
and
that.
And I read that, and it was so insignificant. I was like, okay, that is not a good payoff, gang.
Too long.
I read Unworthy Thor, and I'm like, that was it. Wait, there's got to be more to this. So, I get quickly fatigued over them, and I get ticked off, and I start to see the gimmick, and I'm like, no, I'm not going to. I've been succumbing to these since I was a teenager.
Think by now you've learned your lesson.
I am a slow learner.
How about an event within a title so that you didn't have to be fatigued? So Death of in the Family, for example.
Right.
Something like that.
Well, of course, that was a terrific gimmick. Death in the Family is a great gimmick. A Lonely Place of Dying that followed it was good. There are a lot of the X-Men internal stories that I liked. You know, once upon a time, that Days of Future Past story was actually pretty cool. you know, movie adaptation aside. No, I'm having trouble thinking of any of them just at this moment.
There's so many that were saturated then. They're like, do these count as events anymore or the norm?
They became the norm. And that's what, you know, every season, it used to be, it was a summer crossover event, you know, like when the kids had extra money because they were working summer jobs. But then they became seasonal and quarterly. And it got to the point where it just had become relentless, or I still think it is relentless.
Well, and they would have like the big event they would do, but then they would also have like little mini ones.
Right.
I remember there was one, I don't know, 6 years ago that crossed over between one of the Thor titles and like New Mutants title or something.
Oh, yeah.
And it was just like a story about the Valkyries.
Yeah.
And it was great. It was like 4, 5, 6 issues between like 2 different titles.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just done. And you're like, great. Like those kind of small ones, or even like the Monster Men one from DC. It was a little lackluster for me, but overall I think it has an impact through other titles. And I think that that makes a big difference. And it crossed over between a lot of Bat family titles, so it made sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Detective, Batman, Nightwing.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I begrudgingly signed up for those, it was still like, it's mini, and then it's over. It's a trade's worth, and you're good. You know, and you don't have to wait 8 months for it.
Yeah.
I think the other thing that's kind of frustrating is trying to remember what event was a hinging point for what we're seeing now. Because right now, I'm rereading... or not rereading, but I'm reading for the first time like the first 20 issues of Wolverine and the X-Men.
Okay.
So it goes back to 2012.
Yeah, that was a
good crosses over
series.
With the AVX, Avengers versus X-Men
right.
series. And the Phoenix Force comes to Earth and, you know, all these characters get, the power gets split up and bad things happen. Professor X dies.
So like Schism would have been the thing that launched what you were reading. And Schism was actually pretty good. It was 4 issues and it was done.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Jason Aaron and it actually had like some nice character moments.
Mm-hmm.
I remember there's a great sequence where like Cyclops and Wolverine go to United Nations thing, and Cyclops is expecting Wolverine to kind of just be his usual bitchy self, and Wolverine just says like, yeah, just I'll follow if anybody seems worth following. And Cyclops just like, that's the nicest thing you've ever said to me. And then they proceed to try to kill each other by the end of the series, you know. But yeah, it's like those shortened like 4 issues, we're done, good. That's an event, you can treat it as such. The problem is like if you do 4 issues, here's another 4 issues, here's another 4 issues, because IVX was preceded by Death of X.
Which was a 4-issue series, the IVX was a 6-issue series, so you get a 10-issue event pretty much.
Right,
and
it's all the same writer.
I read Death of X, but not IVX.
Right, and if you don't know that one plays into the other, or if you're reading IVX and you didn't read Death of X, you're going to miss a bunch of stuff, so that's...
Yeah,
I really enjoyed Death of X, but you know what?
I did too.
I knew the outcome with the first issue.
Right.
It was the right. I mean, it's like, okay, well, I know what your big reveal is going to be at the end of this series, because I did already know that Cyclops is dead.
Right.
But how that was transpiring, I already, you know, it was like that was. Maybe
you've been around a while. You know the things.
A couple of times.
Yeah. Just a few times.
Can't get anything past old Cole Hornaday over there.
No. But I did still enjoy it.
Yeah.
I mean, I wasn't like begrudgingly like slogging through it.
Right.
Because every once in a while, I do like just, you know, the whole pulpy aspect of the superhero story.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because it reminds me I don't mind going back and visiting what it's like to be 12 years old again. You know,
childlike wonder.
And,
I like that too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm reading these. I bought these off of a friend of mine 2 summers ago when she went off to go to gradual school, and she was selling off all her comics.
Gradual
school. She was going to gradual school. Courtney was going to gradual school. So I bought up some of her comics. Scott O'Moore bought the rest of them. And but they had been sitting on my couch for like, okay, well, I think it was last summer, but the stack of comics have been sitting there.
Just on your couch?
Yep.
Doesn't your cat have something to say about that?
No. He has said things to say about other places in the apartment. I have something to say about that couch, which is get that away.
Yep. All right. Cool. All right. Well, events, they're not all bad.
But they're not all good.
But they're not all good either.
Yeah.
So it's just like everything in life.
What would you call a percentage of on an average?
See, I would say that you could probably make a really cool graph of quality over
Venn
time.
Venn diagram.
Yeah, because it's like 10 years ago, I'd say the percentage was actually still higher of like, okay, the good.
Yeah.
But now, since there's so many events,
sure.
I'd say that right now we're probably batting maybe 25% good.
Right.
Yeah.
And some of them are fine. They're there.
See, now you're grading them like comic book grading system. Very fine,
okay.
I think it's time versus like how much it's crossing over.
Yeah.
Because I think you got to keep it linear, and that's what I appreciate DC for, is they're more linear when it comes to these kinds of things. And even New 52 is a little bit more linear than Marvel was, and I appreciate that. So there's a lot of factors that go into into it.
I know we're trying to get back to another topic, but I got to tell you that New 52 is really what the nail in the coffin for me.
Yeah.
Because I read every, the 52-week thing, I read every darn one of those.
The Batman Eternal?
Yeah. No. The 52, before New 52, there was the 52.
So that was the nail in the coffin?
Oh,
the 52? Because I actually love the 52.
Oh, no. It was so bland.
Oh, okay.
What did you like about it?
I liked the fact that it managed to tell the story that excluded Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman.
Right.
And it brought to the forefront characters like Renee Montoya, mm-hmm. the Elongated Man, and mm-hmm. Steel. And they had weird odd couple stories like Adam Strange, Starfire, and somebody else were trapped in space, and it's like, oh, Adam Strange, Animal Man, and Starfire,
right.
and like Animal
right.
Man had to like not be seduced by Starfire because he's married, and he's like, no, you're a beautiful woman, God is alien thing, but I'm gonna be faithful.
Bless you, Chris. Those were all stories that could have taken place in one comic book, not 50 spread out over 52. I just felt like that was such a lot of stories. Yeah, but I felt like they all were so saturated and watered down. But that's okay. I'm glad you liked it.
Okay.
I think I was in really an angry phase,
gotcha.
But that was definitely the nail in the coffin for me.
See, it was impressive to me because it was a balance of four writers and Keith Giffen doing the layouts for 52 issues.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, as a example of craftsmanship of workers, it's, I respect it.
I just remember just going, God, let's get to the end of this story.
Okay.
This is just silly.
Speaking of getting to the end of this story, let's move on to book report, everybody.
Thank you.
And let's start with you, Chris. What do you got for us?
So I read the first issue of Aliens Dead Orbit by James DeCoe. It's kind of an event in its own right because... Gotcha.
Who wore it better?
Do you want to do a duo review?
Yeah.
For those of you listening at home who can't see us, Nicole also has that title
We didn't check in. No.
So what did you think? Did you like it?
Yeah, I thought it kind of followed a formula, like cinematically, of what you would kind of expect to see.
It was very formulaic, I don't want to say I didn't like it, but I was like, I've not seen anything new, but you're just number one.
It's definitely not new. I mean, I feel like you're here first, Dakota. I don't feel like you're necessarily... I mean, and he draws things so cool. I want to see him do Aliens.
Yep.
You know?
I will say this about Dakota. His humans are boring in that I actually can't tell the difference between most of them.
Oh, really? I didn't have that issue, but I can see why you do.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't think they're horrible, but...
But they're same-ish.
They're same-ish, and when they're all wearing the same uniforms, then it's like,
that's been a comment that we've had on the show before, where artists who are really great at drawing aliens or monsters or animals suck at drawing people.
Yeah, and I don't want to say he sucks. I think they're okay forms. It's just
he needs to differentiate a little bit harder.
Well, like most aliens movies, cartoons, comics, whatever, everybody's referred to by their last name,
mm-hmm.
and without the benefit of hearing voices like in a movie, I'm just having trouble latching on to these people and their last names.
They don't do that thing where they differentiate the font or they draw little colors around the word balloons.
Yeah, and in an Aliens movie, you tend to get like the southern guy and the compassionate female and the blah, blah, blah. You know, like you get like
or
types.
Or the paranoid schizophrenic person or whatever.
Right, you get the unhinged one. Yeah, so...
Yeah. And this one, I can kind of see some of those. So there were elements of that developing, but I just don't know how long they're going to survive for me to care.
Five issues. That's how long they're going to survive, whether or not you care within that time.
Yeah. The alien looks great.
Yep.
And there was actually a series of deaths that were inventive in mm-hmm. this one because I didn't expect him to do that to those people.
Now I'm interested to read it.
Yeah. Those people. Yep.
I did like it, but it is just a number one, and mm-hmm. Because it's Dakota, I know that it will probably pay off, and I'll stick with it. If I didn't already have that, I'd be kind of bored within the first issue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I could totally see that. I'm here mostly for James. I mean, he could just. He could just have like an alien with like little top hat doing like little vaudeville.
Hello, my baby.
Actually, you might like it better if he's doing that. But I mean, Spaceballs, he could do anything.
The comic book.
Yes.
It could just be him drawing like people on like brown paper bag puppets, you know, like burp, 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 and
great.
I would still be fine with that as well.
Yeah.
Cole's giving Nicole a weird giving look.
Quite
there.
quite a
look. I'm just trying to put that all together in my head. This all the right. the Stucco.
Paper bag puppets.
Alien story. This actually has potential.
Yeah, so final verdict, Chris?
I would give it a B.
A B? Okay. Yeah.
Which is fine.
Yeah.
Final verdict, Nicole?
I'd give it an A because I just love, I love his art and he's following a narrative that you already are comfortable with.
All right.
So.
Folks, excellent. I would give you both an A+. Because I love you that much.
All right.
So much love.
Well, thank you both for sharing that. And Cole Harnedy, you've got a big book in your hand.
Big book that
with a big eyeball on it.
That I is yet again another piece of research material that putting toward our next episode of the Panel Jumper. This is called The Horror, written by Jim Trombetta. It was published in 2010. This is one of those. This book is indicative of my fear of my degenerating memory core, in that I swear up and down, six ways from Sunday, that I read this book, because I know I got it from the Seattle Public Library a couple of years ago, maybe 2 years ago. I swear I read it.
Yeah.
I have no recollection of reading it. Maybe I skimmed it.
That doesn't mean anything, though. I see movies I know I've seen, and it's like watching them for the first time.
Just okay. Just give yourself another decade, old man.
Wait, anyway, how old are you?
I don't want to do that anymore.
We're at 119 now.
Yeah,
you know,
it's just not opening any more doors for me, folks. So let's just.
I still don't have a cell phone. So
yeah, but for you, that's endearing.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Anyway,
so
the horror. So I wound up getting my own copy of it because I wanted to have. There was one thing I wanted to have that Ben and I could use for the next Panel Jumper episode, and that is a DVD that is tipped into the book.
Oh.
That is a copy of a 60 Minutes type news show from 1955 called Confidential File, a rare 30-minute TV show that aired back in October 9th, 1955, about the evils of comic books and their effects on juvenile delinquency.
The evils of comic books.
So this book, this is actually, if you recall, dear listeners, about a couple weeks ago, I reviewed, what was it called, Four Color Fear?
Yeah.
From Fantagraphics, which I thought was a really great collection, but it really was just a collection of these public domain horror and crime comics. This Trombetta actually breaks everything up into thematic chapters, and he gives about two or three pages discussing various themes in the horror and crime comics, and he gives you a nice little historical overview. But the frustrating thing is there are three he doesn't reprint a lot of comics in their entirety. There will be covers, there will be snippets, but gosh darn it, if there aren't like three comics that were in the Four Color Fear in this one, including like the Basil Wolverton story and When Zombies, Corpses Coast to Coast about zombies taking over the world. If I were to recommend one over the other, I would probably recommend The Horror, because I think it actually gives you some more historical background and discussion of the fears and anxieties and the horror around horror and crime comics in the 1950s and what led to them being essentially drummed off the newsstand. I really the reproduction of all the stuff is really, of all the images is really great, of the comics is really great, and you get a little DVD.
Yeah, have you had a chance to watch that
DVD?
I watched it
several times. It's actually on YouTube, but I'm hoping the quality of this is better than what you're seeing on
probably.
YouTube. So this is the one that I want to actually loan to you so you can do your little research, and maybe we can include the excerpts from the Confidential File.
Well, as long as it's in
really,
public domain.
It is so heavy-handed, dude. It's like they stage these moments in the DVD where they stage these things where kids are torturing one another with, you know, matches or a lighter or something, and I'm like... Okay,
because they saw it in a comic.
Because they were inspired by the violence that they found in a comic book. Yeah, mm-hmm.
So. It was comic books. Then it's video games. Right. Then you know there's
wrestling,
always going to be something to be blessed.
Then so it was Slenderman.
So the teaser title. Say that again.
Slenderman
was blamed for some girls murdering somebody. Yeah. So So internet
that
memes.
That is something else, though. That is perpetuating of some messed up internet mythology that I want to pursue at some point.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's different.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, the crux of the subtitle of this book, or the secondary title, is The Horror, Comics the Government Didn't Want You to Read, and Now You Can Read Them Without Impunity.
Excellent.
You're free.
All right, cool. The Horror. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Cole Hornaday.
Red Rover, come over.
And, that is Book Report, and that is our show, and coming up is quiz time. But before we go, I want to tell you that the Perfect Bound podcast is brought to you by The Panel Jumper. See everything Cole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com and Comics Dungeon here at 319 Northeast 45th Street in beautiful downtown Wallingford, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicsdungeon.com. Find us on iTunes or however you get your podcasts at perfectboundpodcast.com. Send us an email, perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com.
Send us some trivia questions.
Send us some trivia questions. That's a good segue, Cole Hornaday, because it's quiz time. Get your quiz hats on, everybody. And this week, the questions come to us from me. This is going to be a real quick one.
Uh-oh.
I might have repeated myself because as I was putting this together, I'm like, have I done this one before? I might have done this one before, but we're going to do it again.
Forgiveness for delightfulness.
Exactly. So this is called Two Timing Actors. I'm going to give you two superheroes, and you have to tell me which one actor played both roles in the movies. Do we understand the concept?
Yes.
I think so.
Okay. Number one, and it starts easy, gets harder.
Okay.
At least I hope it gets harder. Number one, Batman and Daredevil.
Ben Affleck.
Number two, The Human Torch, Captain America.
Chris Evans.
Number three, The Green Lantern, Deadpool.
Ryan Reynolds.
Number four, Storm, Catwoman.
Halle Berry.
And finally, number five, Abe Sapien and Silver Surfer.
Jeffrey Jones.
Almost.
Jones.
David.
Starts with a D.
David Jones.
No.
Darn it.
It's not Darn It Jones. I'll give it to you. It's Doug Jones.
Doug.
So close.
Oh, I'm sorry, Doug.
All right.
We can't be friends on Instagram anymore, Doug.
All right. Well, that is our show. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.
Darn it.